Welcome to Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood Bar and Grill. On the menu for today are some less than filling Japanese chips for an appetizer. Our main course is a grisly video game to film adaptation, and we have a citrusy beer to help you forget that your lawn looks terrible. But before that, let's hear from this week's sponsor, Carnival Cruise Lines.
What makes Carnival Cruise Line the most popular cruise line in the world?
Diarrhea!
In the morning, in the evening, ain't we got fun?
She meant runs.
Not much money, oh, but honey, ain't we got fun?
All over the poop deck.
The food is great here, there's never a bill.
But you will pay for it.
We'll pay up late, dear, let's not miss it.
Clutching the porcelain for dear life.
Thrill, sunny weather, all together, we've got.
You know what I just realized? That's Kathy Lee Gifford singing. No wonder she's drunk all the time.
Eating fancy food, doing what you choose. I'd like your friends back home to get a good look at the first-rate carnival cruise that you took.
With only moderate amounts of salmonella.
All I can say is, wow, hey, look at where you are. Tonight you're living pow, just like a movie star.
Colostomy bag not included. That's Carnival Cruises. We pass more health inspections than Mar-a-Lago.
If they could see you now, they'd see you're having fun.
Clutching the porcelain while you have the runs.
Taking in the sights and playing in the sun. They won't believe that you are such a good sport. Buying all those gifts in a tropical port.
If you consider Imodium gifts. You won't want to see anybody after we're done with you.
Carnival can take you where the fun is.
As long as fun is adjacent to the bathroom.
On a 3, 4, or 7 day cruise vacation to the Bahamas, Caribbean, or Mexican Riviera.
See it all while clinging to the toilet.
Once you've sailed aboard a fun ship, you'll know why Carnival's the most popular cruise line in the world.
Montezuma's revenge never felt so good. In Coltrane Better Make an Appearance news, Universal Pictures has found a writer for its upcoming adaptation of the Gears of War movie. IGN has confirmed that Shane Serlano has been tapped to write the Gears of War screenplay. Serlano is credited as writer of the 4 Avatar sequels currently heading into production. The Coalition's Rod Ferguson confirmed last year that Universal Pictures has optioned the rights to adapt the Gears of War franchise for a film, with Planet of the Apes series producer Dylan Clark. No director has yet been announced for the adaptation. Universal's John Mohn and Xbox's Max Sacknoff, are also overseeing the production. Microsoft Studios has also confirmed Serlano's involvement, with the spokesperson for the company saying that they are excited to confirm that Serlano is on the board of the project. The Gears of War franchise, which the Coalition and Xbox are continuing to support with new content updates, launched in October 2016. Serlano is also the writer and producer of Ridley Scott's The Cartel, which begins filming in January 2018. He previously adapted Michael Bay's Armageddon and wrote Oliver Stone's Savages. I know many view Marcus Fenix as a tragic figure and that the series' writing has become much better over the years, but let's be honest. This franchise was started by Cliffy B., and Cliffy B. likes two things. Guns and bigger guns. That may be a recipe for a fun shooter, but it's not always a good one for Hollywood movies.
Oh god. Dad. Oh, come on, Dad. Dad! Dad! Damn it! Come on! Oh, come on! Come on! God damn it! Hey, damn it! Get up!
Jitty.
Dad!
Stop.
Get up! Come on, Dad, get up! Come
Jitty,
on!
Stop! You gotta let him go.
No.
He's gone.
Oh,
In Lookout Intel, there's going to be a new king in microchip manufacturing news. Intel has been the world's biggest chip maker by revenue since January of 1993, when sales of its 386 and 486 processors helped surpass Japanese companies like NEC and Toshiba. Man, I remember my old, 486, 66 megahertz. I love that computer. The release of the first Pentium CPU later that year and the proliferation of Windows 95 and 98 power PCs over the next decade helped keep Intel on the top. The company continues to grow today. Revenues from its chips for PCs, servers, and Internet of Things devices is still increasing year over year. But new report by IC Insight suggests that Intel might not be on the top of the heap anymore. That's because demand for DRAM and NAND flash memory are both growing at double-digit rates, and Samsung in particular is raking in revenue. Assuming that both companies perform as expected in the second quarter of 2017, Samsung's semiconductor business could pull in $14.6 billion in revenue for that quarter, compared to $14.4 billion for Intel. Even if Samsung can't pass Intel for a second quarter, it seems likely to happen soon, given Samsung's chip business is one of the brightest spots in the balance sheet. In quarter one, revenue was up over 40% year over year. Samsung's positioning is strengthening not just because of increased demand for RAM and flash memory, but because of ongoing NAND storage is keeping prices high. Analysts blame a rocky transition of 2D to 3D NAND increased the demand for Chinese smartphone manufacturers and the increasing popularity of solid-state drives as factors for storage. On the top of the RAM business, Samsung also says it's seeing solid demand for 14-nanometer SoCs, image sensors, and other smartphone chips. Well, duh. The company expects its new 10-nanometer process to keep the business growing. Samsung's manufactures its own Exynos SoCs, as well as some of Qualcomm's Snapdragon chips and some of the A-series chips Apple uses across its iPhone, iPad, iPod, and Apple TV lineups. This should come as a surprise to nobody! Smart devices are the future and they are profitable, and Samsung will find ways to put them in the most innocuous devices so they can help you with your everyday tasks. I do like Snapdragon chips, but they are power-hungry little suckers, and sometimes you just want to go for a hike and stream HD video for 5 hours, and that doesn't leave much battery life left. What, you're telling me I'm weird for doing that?
Show you Weenie here to see you. It's a Japanese band.
Oh, right. Send it in.
But we're just starting to connect.
In Delicious Concoctions reviews, it's springtime and the weekends are already filled with yard work, gardening, and backyard grilling. As the temps rise, you might find your mind wandering to your pole and local fishing hole. With man's best friend at your side, you kick back, throw in a line, and reach for a refreshing boozy beverage. Try Beard Brewing Company's latest double IPA, Dogs and Boats. This big, juicy Imperial IPA features Citra and Mosaic hops across a dried-out malt backbone. With an ABV of 9.1, you will not need many pints to help you relax while you dip your toes in the water and toss a stick to Fido for fetch. Dogs and Boats has Beer Advocate rating of 93, with about 250 people reviewing this lovely beverage. If you are overly concerned about it being overly hoppy, I couldn't find an IBU rating, but I will attend to that it is definitely milder than most double IPAs. So head over to beardbrewing.com or over to the Tap House in historic Sonnington, Connecticut. You know, if you're in the area. And then come pick me up and I'll go and drink with you. You can almost taste summer's approach.
It says here that if a person's not married by the time he's 35, he's got a better chance of being robbed at gunpoint by a desperate and somewhat bloated Christian Slater.
In Topic Wheels Aren't As Much Fun As I Thought They Might Be segments, oh, wheel of insanity, turn, turn, turn. Tell me the lesson which I shall burn. The topic this week is post-Earth habitation. Well, all right. A lot of well-respected and intelligent people have talked about this subject in the past week, so in order to upset the balance, I will chime in. So, visionary Tesla founder, SpaceX founder, Hyperloop founder, and Boring Company founder, Elon Musk ran his mouth again, and this time he pitched the idea of permanent human habitation of Mars, and his ambitious plans to have permanent colony there by 2035. Humans are in danger of extinction, either by asteroid strike or by our own wars. As this little gem fluttered across global headlines, astrophysicist, black hole predictor, white hole predictor, and brain enthusiast Stephen Hawking chimed in saying that humanity needs to settle somewhere else in the next 100 years or be faced with the very real fact of extinction. A lot has been said about these two guys' statements and what they might actually mean. Having read a lot of Stephen Hawking's published journals and books over the years, I can say that he really does mean this. It is entirely in keeping with his worldview, and he hasn't begun to dive into senility. In Universe in a Nutshell, he advocated that all humans should eventually be grown in tanks, because the size of the birth canal limits the growth of cranial development in vitro. I'm not kidding. He is also for genetically modifying humanity for space travel. Fringe ideas, to be sure, but a natural progression of thought based on the desire for humans to be a post-Earth species. Elon presents Dr. Hawking with the transcendent figure that might be needed to jumpstart human post-Earth initiative. He, like John F. Kennedy, is charismatic, technocratic, and sets timetables. Unlike Kennedy, he will probably survive to see part of his dream unfurled. However, all the grandiose talk needs tempering, and it took pragmatic astrophysicists to cast some shade. The boss man of the Hayden Planetarium, best friend of the science guy, and armchair space writer, Neil deGrasse Tyson, was on NPR pitching his new book, The Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. When he was asked to comment about Elon's grandiose pronouncement, Dr. Tyson did, as he always does, made a compliment sandwich, starting with how much he loved Elon's drive and ending with how he too wished humans to be an extraterrestrial species. But the part in the middle laid bare the problems with Elon's plan. Sure, we could probably get humans living on Mars by 2035, but making Mars a permanent home requires some major terraforming on a planetary scale, which would require more energy and resources than anyone could imagine, plus the fact that we don't really know how to do it or how to go about doing it. Sure, we can make enclosures and possibly have Mars be quasi-self-sustaining, but it will always need Earth. But let's say we do get terraforming technology, and we do invest in it. It would still be a whole lot cheaper and easier to just watch the skies for comets and asteroids, and we spy possible life killers to give them gentle push along the way to slightly alter its trajectory. We currently monitor tens of thousands of these objects, and while one would eventually have our name on it, it's a whole lot easier to be proactive than relocate. Also, Mars isn't immune to this. In fact, it has a whole lot of a worst-case scenario. It's closer to the asteroid belt, it has less atmosphere to soften the impact, and any impact would have longer-term ramifications. It's far more sensible to not kill ourselves and keep looking out for things that could possibly do it. Better to settle Mars for far nobler reasons than out of fear. But that is where Dr. Tyson gets it wrong, and Elon and Dr. Hawking get it right. While JFK famously stated, "We do these things not because but they are easy, but because they are hard. And we go to the moon because it is there." This happened all under the backdrop of the Cold War and the space race. There were national security reasons underlying research into rocket technology and human spaceflight. It was this threat, in part, that allowed rapid expansion of technological output on both East and West. Fear motivates people and altruism does not. So while I may not like how dishonest the doomsday panic of Musk and Dr. Hawking is, I understand that it's necessary. I would just would like a little more optimism added to keep the dreamers dreaming and not turning into weird basement-dwelling preppers.
Yes, talking ape man! We are from a society much advanced over your own. A society driven by sprockets. A technological marvel that gives us items such as this!
Who's feeling peanutty?
So, need something notarized?
Nah, we came back to sue you all for completely ruining the planet.
Well, now, I'm not so sure you can say without a doubt that we're actually ruined. Oh, what is that?
That's what you get when you genetically modify corn a little too much.
I'll take the case.
Great. Here's all the environmental information you'll need right here.
What are these?
Punch cards. In the future, that's how we input data into machines we call computers.
That's all I can stand this week on Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. Keep a lookout for a new Mr. Sledge's After Party, and that's so Braven. I'm Kevin from the Cord Nerd saying, when you want to sound profound, just quote something somebody else said. Bye!